A Gathering of Days, A New England Girl's Journal, 1830 to 1832. A novel by Joan W. Bloss. Chapter 13. Monday, June 13, 1813. I'm sorry, 1831. As soon as the clothes were set to boiling, she brought down her pattern book, filled with sketches and hints from friends and various notations. I considered each one with care, and from the whole number selected three, none of which had difficult curves or seemed in any way likely to be too demanding on my present skills. From these I chose, for two principal reasons, the one called Mariner's Compass. Number one, it requires a background of white. For that I can use our old linen sheeting, already mended as far as can be, with outside edges long sewn to the center, and some still further patched. Now that our boxes of house goods are come, I need not scruple excessively over such use of ours. Number two, Mariner's Compass is little known here, though popular near Boston, and north as far as the Maine. 'Tis said to be made by sailors' wives, and their dear ones would be preserved and brought safely home. Tuesday, June 14, 1831. Saying, well begun were half done, she showed me, on my return from school, where she had laid out snips and scraps collected from how many shirts and dresses and salvaged from other worn clothing. You'll need to cut them very exact, was all I had of instruction before commencing my task. Oh, if the Jew but knew the use to which I put his scissors. This cutting is a tedious matter. One must bend to it very close. Also, she watches over me to see that I take sufficient care in laying out the pieces, that the least of the cloth be wasted. Wednesday, June 15, 1831. A story from Uncle Jack. A farmer wagered he knew to the pound how much he grew mare, how much his gray mare could draw. A bystanding stranger selected a log. The farmer nodded. A dollar was wagered, and the mare hitched up. This time it seemed the farmer would lose, for the mare could not budge the log. Before he forfeit his dollar, though, the Yankee rechecked the scene, and there he discovered a pair of wet mittens lying on the log. No sooner did he lift them off than the mare moved smartly along, the farmer winning his wager. But is it a true story? Daniel asked. Do you think it might have happened? I mean, sir, would a really good farmer know his horse so exactly? And what a mare could do? Thursday, June 16, 1813. Joshua surprised us this afternoon by meeting us at school. He had it in his mind to walk down to the Shipman's, and if he was going to go that far, would do it with company. His mission afforded a second surprise. Teacher Halt said he'd find Joshua some books, and Joshua, once the most indifferent of scholars, had troubled to come this long dusty way just to claim the favor. Jay now confesses he inspires to study at Mr. Dudley Leavitt's school down to Meredith. June 8th, 1831. Every day I must cut, trim, and sort pieces of my quilt. I thought to have had it all ready by now, but seems to have scarcely started. You would not think it would take so long just to prepare the work. When I remarked on my lack of progress, she quickly took the occasion to point her moral out. Perhaps, had you known what you're learning now, you would not have so quickly agreed to what you did last winter. Dang. Monday, June 20th, 1830. I dare say it went well with Asa since giving his verse to Sophie. Every day this summer term, she walks homeward with Cassie and me, and none of us mention what all of us know. The road we take is the longest way around to Sophie's own front door. Lately, I notice, nearly every day, Asa, by what coincidence, finds himself at fence side just after school lets out. Wednesday, June 22nd, 1831. Nothing as we have done it before seems to satisfy her now. Loosen the bed sheets first from the corners. That way the strain will be less great and the wear prolonged. Catherine, Maddie, don't pull at them so. Now mind what I've told you, girls. She is that particular how each thing is done. Do mind this and do mind that. Work, work worth doing is work worth doing well. I hear it at every hand. Yet just as it seems I bring only vexation, she'll take my side against Daniel's complaint, or even caution my father. But Charles, she's but a child. Yesterday I came upon her as she repacked a trunk in which she'd brought clothes out from Boston. Do you like these, Catherine? She asked, holding up a set of cuffs and a matching collar. When I allowed by word and gesture that I thought them beautiful, she said quietly, they should be mine, and gave them over to me. Thursday, June 23rd, 1831. We had a great storm last night. It split two trees near the Westfields fence. This morning, water flowed over the road like a new sprung river. Indeed, at the steps at the corner of the barn, we had an infant waterfall, which lasted half the day. I think there are few displays more grand than a summer's thunderstorm. Maddie feels quite the opposite and passed the whole of last night's storm with a shawl pressed to her eyes. Friday, June 24th, 1831. With the addition of those cut today, I now have sufficient pieces to begin the figures. The background will take longer as 'tis larger in extent. Monday, June 27, 1831. Weekday, Saturday, and Sabbath day fly. We have very much to do, to which is added my quilting. At this, I stitch and stitch away. I must give to her approve each block as it's completed. Lately, the weather is very fine, and the evenings long. The stricture to be home by dark, which so shortens our winter visits, hardly touches us now. Night after night, our yard or the shipman's rings with laughter as we engage in blind man's bluff or snap the whip or similar diversions. Daniel and Asa have become fast friends, sometimes a blessing and sometimes not, as they will chase after me and Cassie with some horrid toad they've caught or garden snake they've captured. Hurry for 4th of July! Or, sorry, it really says, hurry for July the 4th. That is what day we're on. We pass the whole of this day in town, having departed just as soon as morning chores released. The sun was not yet fully risen, when, with packed meal beside us in the wagon and well-cooled keg of cider beside, we five left the yard. Even as we rumbled towards town, we heard the bells begin to ring and the firing of cannon. The streets around the green were thronged and noisy with a million cries and small boys going everywhere, hustling, drumming on pails. From time to time, a firecracker would explode nearby. We saw two teams that nearly panicked, the horses rearing though confined by harness and winnowing in terror. Babe and Nellie seemed deaf-eared throughout, and were calm all day. Sometimes I feel I must love those beasts for their unfailing patience, their enormous size. Wagons and chaises surrounded the green, whereon at 9 o'clock prompted the militia paraded. Presently, all the marchers stopped and stood most steadily in their places, while fife and fiddle and drummers performed, the last of their tunes being Yankee Doodle, which was the most applauded. Next was read, in ringing tones, the Declaration of Independence, this being followed by a prayer given by the militia captain. A soldier's prayer is even more forceful than one by a minister. Perhaps 'tis the unexpectedness of sometimes strength so sweetly gentle, maybe? I am reminded of that day when Father insisted that he alone would attend the cooking. Daniel and Asa soon slipped off, and Father went with Uncle Jack to refresh himself at the tavern. However, we women wanted not for diversion, and hardly knew they were gone. We women wanted not for diversion, and they were, in other words, they were preoccupied. They didn't even, weren't paying attention, and they hardly recognized when all the men and boys had left. The scene before us was constantly changing, and at 11 o'clock in the morning, the oration was given. A judge, J. Wax, came down from Plymouth especially for the event. At the end, he espied two fellows with thin white hair and pipe-stem legs, wearing what seemed the well-worn remains of that well-loved uniform, the buff-colored trousers and deep blue coats of General Washington's soldiers. Bless you. Excuse me. The speaker's imagination placed them both at Valley Forge and lauded them as patriots by whose example we might be inspired, and called on them to reply. At this, they nudged and poked each other, grinned in embarrassment, toothlessness, in embarrassed toothlessness. And only later did we all learn these were Haitians who'd served with Bourguignon and shared in his defeat. By midday, it having grown quite warm, we sat beside the wagon, grateful for the wedge of shade that its height afforded. There did we eat the meat we'd brought. The outdoor air enhanced its flavor, and presently Father reappeared to keep us company. He'd heard reports of burns, one maiming, though misfired, explosions. The afternoon hours drifted by. Some who'd heard of Father's remarriage took the occasion to come around and examine his new wife. I think she came off well in this. She seemed not discomforted and replied most pleasantly as she was spoken to. There was one final delight in the day as we made our way towards home, weary, warm, and satisfied. I looked back over the valley. At this very moment, there arose from the green a final display of fireworks against the evening sky. Even Daniel applauded this, and for once he did not complain or make a fall shy comparison with how 'tis done in Boston. Thursday, July 7, 1831. Very hot again today, with no respect of rain. The raspberries are poor this year. We even consider whether 'tis worthwhile to turn them into jam. Because it has lately been so dry, Father is in daily fear that we may suffer a fire. We've stored some buckets of water in the house and are especially careful over our cooking now. Walking home from school today, we saw how deeply our bare feet imprinted the soft and velvet dust. The shipman family just now left, they having passed here a pleasant visit after the supper hour. Friday, July 8th, 1831. Maddie was stung by a bee today, which caused her face to swell. I noticed that she came not to me, but rather took her complaint to her, who quickly put her handwork down and took Maddie by the hand, led her to the summer kitchen. There she mixed salt and water together until they formed a crusty paste, which she applied to the sting. It proved a useful remedy with which we're not acquainted, with which we were not acquainted. I watched the whole of this from my stool, where I sat with churn between my knees, willing the butter to come. Later she sat with M a while and sang small funny songs to her. Our mother would have done the same and did so once for me. Oh, I'm getting emotional. Okay. Monday, July 11th, 1831. My daughter just asked, did you just ask why am I getting emotional?
Yeah.
Because when your mother's not here anymore, as mine just left 3 years ago, it's a sweet emotion. The love of a mother to a daughter is welling up in me. I hope it is in you guys too. Evidently, it may not be happening in her. Okay, let's go on. Monday, July 11, 1831. Oof, let me calm down. Calm down, emotions. Okay. We hear they're having difficulty to raise the money to complete the Bunker Hill Monument. Solicitations have been made, but falls short of the mark. 6 years ago, when she took Daniel to witness the marker's dedication, General Lafayette from France. We've fallen in love with Hamilton, the play, in spite of the poor lack of creative language. They use some interesting language. Lafayette has been studied in this home since Hamilton, so that I knew that would impact her. Anyway, let's continue. General Lafayette from France and our own Senator Daniel Webster both were there. Daniel had said they were the same because they shared the same. They shared the name. And now, she exclaimed, as a storyteller will, who has a particular point to make, I proudly add that Senator Webster also was the son of a farmer in the state of New Hampshire. Hurrah! Yelled Maddie and I at this. But Daniel looked none too pleased. Mr. Webster had given a rousing speech, as he was expected to do, being well known for declaiming. In it, he said that the monument, because both of its height and location, would now greet the voyager who entered Boston Harbor. Conversely and equally fitting, he thought, it would provide the traveler departing with his last sight of home. Tuesday, July 12, 1831. Daniel has found a most perfect new name by which I and Maddie, too, may address his mother. Mammon, spelled M-A-M-M-A-N-N. Mammon, he said, combining her name with the common Mama. So Mammon. However, she heard it otherwise. Daniel, she cried, what an elegant thought. We can say it after the French, and thus the height of fashion. Maman. But that is it may. It pleased me well. Also, it seemed, her light remark served to conceal true feelings. Later, I told her, good night, Maman. Oh. It was, and both of us knew it to be, the first I'd addressed her directly. Wow. Wednesday. Daniel is teaching me how to do sums. Therefore, I plan to surprise him next winter by knitting him a muffler, fringed and dyed to the butternut's color. Thursday, July 14, 1831. A boy has died in Meredith of burns received the 4th of July while setting off explosions. A terrible price, as Maman says, to pay for celebration. Father believes it will always happen, so long as the 4th is celebrated, and that so long as this nation of ours holds dear the freedom on which it rests and which we love, he concluded. You know I love it no less than you, she retorted hotly. Still, must I believe that there exist other means to show our joy than those which cost us human life year after year after year? And do you remember Zebulon Preston? Mr. Shipman asked. How he got his ear blown off and stood there with the blood running down, not knowing what happened? Wow. Maman shushed him on the spot, but I was fascinated. Mr. Pressman, the flour miller, was well known to me. Even though while he talked with Father, I had stared at the side of his head with its furrowed scar. So that was how it came about. I had not known before. Mrs. Preston, the miller's wife, it was pimpled and stouted. Mrs. Preston, the miller's wife, is very pimpled and stout. But who would accept so maimed a man except she had no voice? They had many children, the eldest, Maddie's age. Thursday, strike through. Friday, July 15, 1831. Beans. We eat them as they come in at morning and evening meals. When we shell them to spread and dry and save again next winter. It seems each year it is the same. I am certain I would rejoice never to see more beans. Mammon says that it is very short-sighted, while Father reminds us with serious voice, for harvest and good bounty, one ought give naught but thanks. Were it your teacher, Catherine, he said, I'd have to write that out. In other words, she should appreciate the harvest that they received, even if it's just beans. Saturday, July 6. Oh, it also, when her father says, do you remember your teacher taught you this? Or should we just write that part out or disregard what you've been taught? That's pretty much what that means. Okay. Saturday, July 6. Scarcely time these summer nights for keeping of the journal. I would record if hastily that our teacher, gentle and kind, does better with the younger pupils than we older scholars. Cassie and I, still best of friends, have rather less to say to each other than we were wont to do. Often now I confide in Maman, and Cassie and Daniel, as who would have guessed, are plainly drawn to each other. So Catherine confides in Maman more. When once I mentioned this to Cassie, her quickening color clearly confirmed what her words denied. Asa teases her very much, which I think not kind. Okay. Sabbath. They were wrong, observes Maman, about the swallows and spring. It is exactly one of them that creates a season. Take a whole flock, overwhelming a meadow, and that is merely a lot of birds and good grain plundered besides. That is the end of chapter 13.